Hello guys, welcome to the start of the next decade. You're listening to Decade Gold Podcast, where we talk about life, success, self-improvement, and how we can get ourselves ready for the next decade. I'm your host, Francis Comer. Today I have with me Ms. Terry McDougall. Terry is an executive and career coach, speaker, and best-selling author of Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness, and Success on Your Own Time. I will open the floor so she can introduce herself properly and tell you guys about the work, the great work she's doing. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Great to be on with you.
Yeah, before we go further, can you start by introducing yourself and tell the guests about the great work you've been doing for the past decade or so?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. I am an executive and career coach. And I am also the author of a book called Winning the Game of Work. I have been doing full-time coaching since 2017. And before that, I worked in marketing for about 30 years, actually. Right. About 21 of those years, I was doing marketing in banking.
Oh, wow. That's pretty exciting. So how was your 2020 and how was life for you, like the new normal? And how were you able to adapt to what happened in 2020, the coronavirus, and your work life, and like how we used to do things back then?
You know, for me, it actually hasn't been too disruptive because as a career and executive coach, most of my clients I meet with by Zoom or by phone. I'm outside of Chicago, and I have clients in the Chicagoland area, but I have clients all over the country, and so I'm not typically meeting with them in person. I'd say occasionally I would meet with clients in person if they were in my area geographically, and, you know, that's been a little bit tough feeling so cooped up and not being able to get out. I also used to go to a lot of networking events, and so, you know, that's really been the only disruption. I guess I would say from kind of the flip side of that is 2020 was actually a pretty good year for me from a coaching standpoint, because I think that, you know, with people not going into work, it really gave them a different perspective on their careers. And for some people that maybe haven't been happy in what they've been doing, I think that they finally sort of woke up to that. Maybe it's because, you know, they weren't caught up in the routine of getting up and going to work every day. They would just, you know, go to their home office. And for some people, they decided that they wanted to do something different in their career. And so they hired me as a coach. And then unfortunately, obviously, with the impact of, you know, the economic issues with, you know, there have been a lot of layoffs in 2020. The part of my business that helps people with their career transition has been pretty busy. I've worked with a lot of people to try to help them get new jobs.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. I feel like 2020 was a year like when everybody needs to take a break from all what you've been doing and look back and before you get yourself ready for the next decade. And stuff like that. So how quickly were you able to adapt to the new normal? Like the lockdown, the stay home, the putting on masks, just like how they say we should live life, the new normal.
You know, it didn't take me long to adapt, you know, from my business standpoint, because like I said, it wasn't, you know, what a lot of other people had to adapt to, like working from home. I was already doing that. But, you know, some of the other things, I mean, it was funny when we first started having to wear masks, it was really hard to find masks. Yeah. And I can remember going into my neighborhood Walgreens before they really mandated wearing masks. And I walked in and I was like the only person in the store not wearing a mask. And so it said to me, like, okay, I better figure out how to get some masks. So I actually found a pattern online and I made a whole bunch of masks for my whole family. Then of course, you know, the stores caught up and started, you know, having them in the store so you could buy them. But We've got plenty of masks now.
I feel like 2020 really hit the young people, and like a lot of young people like me and some of my colleagues out there across the world were just living life, and like we're not looking back to see where we're going or something. And when the pandemic comes, like everybody got the chance to sit back home and look and then try to figure out like what the next step and what am I doing in my life and what am I supposed to be doing and stuff like that. So what is one of the biggest mistakes you made in your career and what did you learn from it?
You know, I guess the first thing I would say is that I don't really believe in the idea of mistakes, because I think that it's all about learning.
Oh, okay,
but
yeah.
I do understand what you're asking, and I have a story for you. And it has a happy ending, by the way. When I worked at a bank a couple times ago, it wasn't my last job, it was the time before that, there was somebody that headed the marketing department in the division that I worked in. And he was, so he was my boss, my direct supervisor. And I was very close with him. He really relied on me a lot. And I had a, you know, pretty good view into what his responsibilities were. Like I said, I was sort of like his right-hand person, you know, kind of the first person he'd come to when he had projects or whatever. And he ended up leaving the company. And when he left, I thought to myself, well, I've been able to see pretty up close and personal what he did in his job. And I thought, okay, well, I think I'm ready to take that leap to the next level. So I applied for the job. I did get an interview. I progressed to the second level of interviews. And that's when the problem hit. I think because I had worked at the company for quite a number of years, and because it was an internal position, I didn't really think that I had to prepare much for the interview, because I thought, well, I know what I do every day. And the people that I was interviewing with were, you know, other colleagues at the company. So I thought, well, they know me. And when I went into the second interview, it was a panel interview. So there were three people sitting across the table from me interviewing me. And just for whatever reason, I got really nervous. And I just didn't do a very good job of explaining the value that I provided. And I think it's because I really didn't do anything to prepare. I just thought, oh, I'll just go in. I know how to talk about myself. So I got eliminated from the job process. And but I felt really embarrassed. And so what I decided to do was find a career coach that could help me get better at interviewing. And, you know, I think it was sort of a combination of thinking about how do I talk about myself in a way that, you know, I didn't feel self-conscious, but also just being confident in the interview and starting to present myself like somebody who is capable of stepping into a leadership position. And she helped me a lot. I didn't really think it was going to benefit me immediately, but I thought I would be, you know, ready for the next time that I got an interview. But as it turned out, I got the opportunity to put my skills to work a lot sooner than I thought, because they went through that whole interview process, you know, of the interview, the recruiting that I got eliminated from, and they offered the job to a woman who turned it down. And I suppose they just didn't think that there was anybody that was a good, you know, secondary candidate that they wanted to offer the job to. So they started the process all over again. And so, you know, with my newfound skills, I reapplied for the job. This time I made it all the way through several rounds of interviews to the final round of interview. And this time it was, you know, the CEO of the division and his two, you know, highest level executives that reported to him. And it was a panel interview too. But I remember sitting in that that boardroom, and I felt really comfortable. And it got down to me and an external candidate. He worked for another bank that they were interviewing. And unfortunately for me, they decided to hire the external candidate. And I did, you know, it did sting definitely that I didn't get the offer after I, you know, went through this twice. But the good news, the happy ending to the story is that the day that I found out that I didn't get the job, I came back from lunch and there was a voicemail on my phone on my office phone that was a recruiter that was looking for somebody with my background. And by the time that I ended up leaving the company a few months later, I had two job offers and I was interviewing for a third job, and I ended up taking one of the jobs that I was offered, and it ended up doubling my compensation in the first year. So the reality is that even though I had to kind of go through those bumping experiences of you know, kind of making mistakes and failing, it actually turned out great. And in fact, I think that the job that I got was better than the one that I didn't get.
Oh, wow. That's nice. So looking back in your 20s and in your 30s, you said you worked for how many decades?
Three.
Oh, three. That's actually long, like 30 years of working experience. So when did you actually discover your passion, and how were you able to decide that this is what I'm going to do?
You know, I feel like I was very lucky to get some very critical advice when I first got out of college. And it's funny because when I first got out of college, I just wanted a job. I didn't really care what it was. And my boyfriend's mom gave me this book that's called What Color Is Your Parachute by Richard Bowles, who's an expert. I mean, he's deceased now, but he just died a few years ago. And he has updated this book every year since 1970. And now that he's gone, his children updated on an annual basis. But this book really helps you to think about what are you good at, what do you like to do, and what are the skills that you have that would be marketable in the job force. And, you know, my boyfriend's mom was like, read this book and do all of the exercises before you start applying for jobs. And so that really helped me to kind of pinpoint the types of jobs that would actually be a good fit for me. And at the time that when I went through those exercises, the things that came up were publishing, advertising, marketing, and nonprofits. So that just gave me a place to focus my efforts. And it ended up that my first job was with a magazine publishing company in the advertising sales department. I was the administrative assistant to all the salespeople. And that gave me a really great environment in which I could learn. You know, because I didn't really understand the whole business model of how magazines worked and how they made money. And the company actually also had several conferences that they put on every year. And so, you know, I just got to, you know, be there helping them and learning. And it was great. And that just sort of got me started on this path that, you know, was I worked for another publisher after that, but I was working in the area of marketing. And that just got me started on my career, which ended up being completely in marketing.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So like, as we look into the future, so what would you say to almost half of the population of young people that are solely depending on getting a college degree that they are not going to end up using in their career? Like, so what is your advice to someone that is just solely depending on getting a college degree and not giving him or herself a chance to explore some other areas in our life? Because like, when you look at society right now, like a lot of us are not using the degree we got in school, and we end up using doing something that we're passionate about and things we love doing. So what is your advice to this set of people?
Well, I think it really starts with getting in touch with yourself and what are the things that you like to do. And, you know, I think a lot of times when people are chasing degrees, that they're doing that because somebody else has told them that that's what it takes to be successful. And, you know, that can be a path towards success, but to me, true success means, you know, not only are you, you know, working for the good company and making money, and it also means that you are enjoying what you're doing and you're feeling fulfilled by what you're doing, and you're using your most important strengths and skills in your job. You know, a lot of times I see people that are multi-talented. You know, they're able to do a lot of things. It doesn't mean that they enjoy doing all of them. And sometimes people will get it in their mind that, you know, it's not work unless it's hard. It's not work unless you're sort of struggling and you're constantly challenged. And I don't really believe that. I mean, I do believe, you know, obviously that sometimes there are things that we have to do at work that we might not enjoy. But if you're finding that, you know, the balance of the things that you don't enjoy outweighs the things that you do enjoy, and then it's probably not a good fit for you.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Like, for my own part, like, I love doing a lot of stuff, and I'm not solely depending on getting a college degree, but I'm actually going to start studying soon in Chicago. I'm going to start studying management, because, like, I already know what I'm going to do in life. Like, I already have, like, I already found my purpose, and I have, like, a startup company, so I'm just going to study management. It's because, like, I need to know how to manage people and how to manage myself, my finances, and just to get myself ready for the real life. So, like, yeah. So what advice do you have for young someone that is coming up? Like, what do you wish you knew, you have known when you're starting a career that you know now? Like, what advice?
What I wish that I would have known when I started my career is that it's important to speak up for yourself. I think that a lot of times when people first start their careers, that they just, you know, they think everybody around them is smarter than them, or that that people around them think the same way that the individual does. And, you know, I spent a lot of time early in my career, like I'd go into a meeting and maybe there was like a brainstorming session and I wouldn't really say anything because I was kind of prejudging my ideas. I was thinking, you know, I would come up with an idea and I would say, oh, well, probably somebody else in this room has already come up with this idea and they're not sharing it because it's not a good idea. And then what would happen, this has happened so many times, but until I learned my lesson, halfway or three quarters of the way through the meeting, somebody says the idea that I came up with in the first 5 minutes. And then everybody's like, oh, that's such a great idea. Yeah. And then I would kind of kick myself for not speaking up. And so I think the thing to, you know, I guess dovetailing into what advice do I have for, you know, people coming up today is that, you know, trust that your perspective is valid. And, you know, if you end up saying something that, you know, sounds silly or whatever, don't worry about it. Everybody does it. I have seen like very senior level people, you know, say things that sounded kind of stupid, right? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, because just, you know, that's a small price to pay for maybe that great idea that you're not saying because you're afraid you might say something silly.
Yeah, exactly. So like what you're saying is actually true. I remember when I was supposed to give like a short talk at the United Nations, I had to sit down and prejudge myself. Like I was just thinking like if I'm going to say the right thing or what if I'm going to say something wrong? And then when it was my time to speak up, like I just sit down and then just give my short talk. And then actually after everything finished, everybody was like, oh, Francis, you did a good job. I was like, yeah, I was supposed to do a good job. So like, yeah.
First of all, let me just say that, you know, when you were invited to speak at the United Nations, wow, that's so impressive. But, you know, I think one of the things that I found, and I guess this does kind of go with what I was saying earlier about what I wish I knew, is that my perspective was valid and everybody else's perspective is valid too. And it's natural for us to be fearful that people aren't going to understand us. But most of the time they do if you show up authentically and honestly. And, you know, whenever I have taken the risk to share something that is, you know, really personal or embarrassing or, you know, whatever, people usually will come up to me and say, you know, I could really relate to that. I had something similar happen to me, you know, and I think that it's really important for us to share that kind of, you know, vulnerable stuff because it allows us to connect with other people. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually cool. Like one of the lessons I learned is that like there's always somebody out there that is looking out to learn and to learn, to listen and learn from what we have to say, because like whatever we have to say and whatever idea we got and something that we have in our mind is always valid. Like, we need to pass on the message, like, because there's always someone out there that wants to learn from it, and people can get inspired by listening and listening to what we have to say about experience or whatever knowledge we got. Everyone is talking about networking. It is really important. How does someone who is shy learn how to network from your own point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose whenever I was, you know, early in my career, I did feel a lot of pressure to network, you know, and I always thought of that as like, oh, I have to go to this like networking event and walk into this big meeting room where I don't know anybody. And it just felt awkward. But really, your network does start with people that you just know. It could be people that you know from school, people that you've worked with, people in your family, friends. That's kind of the beginning part of your network. And then what I suggest to people, and LinkedIn makes it so easy now, is that when you meet someone, get LinkedIn with them. And you know, the other thing is that, say, if you're looking for a job or, you know, you just want to learn from someone, and say maybe you go to a conference and you hear somebody speak, or you know, come across somebody's profile on LinkedIn. I think that the approach to getting people to want to network with you is to approach them with curiosity and gratitude. So, you know, I've had people that have reached out to me that I didn't know them, and they just saw my LinkedIn profile and, you know, have said, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing. And I'd like to know more about it. I mean, then this goes back to, there was a time several years ago whenever I led the event marketing team for the last place that I worked, and somebody reached out and said, you know, I'm interested in maybe becoming an event planner, and I'd like to know more about what you do. And I met her for coffee, and we actually ended up becoming friends. But since I've written my book, and since I've gone out on my own as a coach, I've had people reach out to me and say, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, getting a coaching certification. Can I talk to you about it? Or, you know, can I talk to you about what the process was like writing your book? And I'm happy to do that. I mean, I've met some really fantastic people by being open to having those conversations. And, you know, it's fulfilling for me. One of the things that I would advise people, though, if they want to network, is recognize that networking is a reciprocity is very important in networking. So if you approach somebody and you are asking them for something, like, even if I'd like to have a 10-minute conversation with you to learn more about, you know, your industry or your profession or something like that, offer something to them. Like, just at the end, say, hey, what can I do for you? Now, probably 9 times out of 10, the person is going to say, you know, I don't really need anything, but, you know, thank you for offering. But sometimes they might say, well, you know, I'd like to learn more about what you do. Or, you know, I've said to people sometimes that, you know, especially people that are in college or, you know, just out of college, they might be networking with, you know, a senior level executive in a company. And, you know, I think that sometimes they feel a little funny about saying, well, what can I do for you? You know, I'm 22 and you're 50. You know, what can I do for you? But the reality is that we never know what people need. And the example that I have with that is that, you know, a 50-year-old could have an 18-year-old that's getting ready to go off to college. And maybe their son or daughter is has applied to the college that, you know, this person went to. And so their request might be like, hey, could you have a conversation with my daughter to let her know what it's like going to that college? Just never know what the situation might be. And we also never know when they might come back around, because it could be like 10 years from now and you've got, you know, you've got a job at a company and that person is looking for a job. I mean,
yeah. So like, I feel like, everybody needs each other, and like we're all kind of like useful and stuff like that. And like as we approach the next decade, everybody's kind of like curious to know like like what if we have something like the coronavirus? How can we get ourselves ready? Or like how can I get myself intact? Like have something that I'm doing to keep myself busy during this next decade. And now even the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, came from Africa. He came here to study in the US, and now he's the richest man. So I just feel like everything is kind of like possible. So what can you say to young people about the three business value ideas? Is it really important? And what are the three ways to add value to your business for like someone who is just looking up to start up, a business, just have the idea and have the concept and the mindset of making money out of this idea. So what are your thoughts and what are your advice to this type of young people?
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny when you're talking about like, how do people prepare for like the next coronavirus or whatever. You know, when I look back over my career, my first job, when I walked in, there was not a computer on the desk. There was a typewriter. Like this was like the pre-computer days, not just the pre-internet days. And, you know, it probably the first, 10 years of my career, it was pre, you know, I got a computer a few months into my first job. But there was no Windows. Everything was on those, floppy disks. You know, there was no interconnectivity between computers. Like you actually would take the disk and give it to somebody else to put in their computer. So the reason why I bring this up is because things are constantly changing. And I couldn't imagine what the internet was back in the 80s when I got out of college. But, you know, you just stay curious. You keep looking for the opportunities. You keep thinking like about what's possible and you keep learning. And, you know, like the coronavirus, I mean, I've gone through, you know, a couple of recessions, lived through 9/11, which was, you know, had a big negative impact on the economy in the United States, and certainly had a big negative impact on, you know, I think I think our feelings of freedom here. You know, there was a lot of fear after that that hadn't really been present before then. And then of course the financial meltdown in 2007 and 8. I mean, there's always like booms and busts. You just sort of have to remain resilient and adaptable and curious and, you know, have a positive outlook that we're going to get through this. We're going to get through coronavirus and we'll have learned lessons from this. Just like, you know, one of the things I'll tell you that has gone through my mind a lot during this time that we're dealing with coronavirus is, you know, of course it's been really difficult, but then I think back to my grandparents living through World War II. My grandfather, you know, went to Europe and fought in the war, and, you know, they got married after the war, but, you know, they had to live through that. And there was no certainty about, you know, were we going to come through it? You know, would my grandfather live through the battles that he was in? You know, we all have our difficulties and we all live through them. You know, it's the history that we experience as we're living our lives.
Like, I feel like this generation is pretty much the best generation yet so far, because like we have everything in our fingertip. Like we have the internet and also we have communication that can connect us to everywhere around the world. And also we have the social media. And then like, I just feel like the social media is taking over our lives, because there's a lot of comparison and competition going on. And almost a lot of young people are using like the social media for just like something fancy, but not something they can use that can better their lives and can use it as an advantage, because like the internet is really, it's really cool and it can provide us with a lot of opportunities. Because like when I'm looking back at my life, it's like if it was not internet, I shouldn't be here. Because like back then when I was in junior high school, like I used to, whenever I came out from school, like I would just go straight to the internet cafe, do some research, look out for opportunities, and see how best I can get myself something. And here I am today, and I just feel like it's because of the internet that's why I'm here today. And I just feel like a lot of young people of this generation are not making good use of the internet.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we can use it. We can use the power of the internet, all of the knowledge and the connectivity, and really kind of imagine what the opportunities and potential is and leverage it that way. Or we can just use it as a diversion. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with using it as a diversion sometimes, but certainly we can end up wasting a lot of time and not really, you know, harnessing the power of what's there. And it, I feel sort of privileged in a way to have lived in the pre-internet, pre-computer age, because I can really make a comparison between, you know, back when, like when I was in my 20s, just as an example, you know, I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and I had like a paper map in my car. So, you know, of the whole region. And, you know, if I was going to a party or, you know, if I was going someplace, I would have to look it up on the map and plan my route. And it was very common back then to like stop at a gas station and ask for directions because we didn't have everything right at our fingertips on our.
Yeah. And now we have the GPS.
And then like the interim was that, okay. And then they had like MapQuest on the computer, but we didn't have smartphones yet. And so if I was going someplace, I would like look it up on the computer and I would print it out. I would print out the step-by-step directions on a piece of paper, you know, and now it's like, you know, now it's like, you just can say, hey Siri, you know, how do I get there? And she tells you like step-by-step, like how to get there.
Yeah, that's cool. It's really nice today to have you as my guest for this first episode. And I really enjoy talking to you. So like, what would be your last word to our guests and our listener out there listening to the first episode? Because like the title for this episode is Don't Be the Flag, Be the Wind.
My final word is that you matter. I firmly believe that each of us is on this earth for a reason. And our purpose here is to figure out what it is and to feel confident in it. Not to compare ourselves to other people, because everybody has their own gifts and our job is to, you know, discover those gifts and to use those gifts as much as possible.
Thanks everyone for listening to the first episode of this podcast. Don't forget to share, comment. I would like to know your feedback and thought about the first episode. And also, don't forget to subscribe and listen to wherever you get your podcast. And stay tuned as I bring to you another interesting discussion next week. Bye, guys.